The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Welcome to it. Wednesdays here at Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and you will get to the shout-outs coming up in the StreamYard, our starting five. If you're new to the show, you get in early, you'll hear your name in the StreamYard, the Hail Varsity YouTube channels, where you watch the show and participate that way. You can hear us across the Hail Varsity Radio Network, different affiliates across the state. We're proud to be heard in a lot of different spots. Can always email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com. And numbers to get in, 489-1240, 489-1240, 800-825-5865. We hear from Matt Rhule today, not only from his sit-down with the Husker Radio Network, the reaction to Colorado at night, but also really good podcast, Always College Football with Greg McElroy over on ESPN, one of their lead college football analysts, and really insightful 15 to 20 minutes from Coach Rhule. And Rhule does a great job of making himself available on the radio locally, but also to the different podcasts around the country with some of the national talking heads. And McElroy does a great job with his pod, but also his time covering college football. And we'll get some unique insight from Matt Rhule, not only the quarterback race, but also just the identity. What's it going to take? What's it going to need to take from a Big Ten standpoint in this new 18-team league? And it begs the question of the day, how wide open do you think the Big Ten will be? We always talked the last 100 years, it felt like, well, let's flip a coin. Let's look at the schedules. Who's going to win the West this year? Or why will Iowa or Wisconsin win the West? Only to go get donkey stomped by Ohio State or Michigan. That happened. Once in a while, you'd get a wild card to demonstrate just the wide openness of the West, where 2 years out of four, you had Northwestern make it in. Kudos to them. Second to last year of the existing divisions, you had Purdue get in to the Big Ten championship game before Brom bolted for Louisville. So all those divisions are gone. You know this. I know this. Bob Dole knows this. Listen, how top-heavy is the league going to be? It's going to be fierce, man. That top four is going to be the top four. But what is the ascension and falling rate like for teams that are all vying to get that look early in the year? How you're looked at coming into the year helps paint your playoff picture. And then you figure it out schedule-wise. Mike Babcock going to be with us from Hail Varsity and Herd at Sports. We'll talk some ball with Babbers in about 15 minutes. He's hanging out in the green room. I can't tell if that's a tie-dye Grateful Dead shirt or not.
Don't think it is.
Ah, hurts, man. Next week, Babbers, please wear a tie-dye. In hour two, we'll check in with Evan Bland, Dr. Brandon Seifert, Nebraska Orthopedic Center. He'll join us later on in hour two. 489-1240, the number to get in. We told you that. Merritt Dawson, make that Dawson Merritt. It's like I'm reading roll call in grade school. Dawson Merritt, the talented player from Kansas City. It is down to two horse race for this talented defender for Nebraska's 500-mile radius, and it is Nebraska and it is Roll Tide. We'll see where that thing ends up, but good for Nebraska as they're in on a defender they really like. Christian Jones, of course, priority numero uno defensively locally. And we know how Nebraska's fared the last couple of weeks with getting big-time visitors in. But Dawson Merritt would be a nice four-star linebacker addition. Let's get the shout-outs going. Jeff is in. He is first. Justin checks in second. KG Light was in around 341. Good for you, KG. Brandon is here. Roger is here. NASCAR Eric says present. He's here. Tuck. Tuck, good to have you. Tim asks an important question. Says, hey, y'all, is it August yet? I'm not going to try and speed through my May too much. The weather's too good. It's grilling season.
Well, let's be honest. September's what we're really looking forward to. No offense to UTEP, but I know you get fall camp thoughts and UTEP, but it's September that I'm really kind of
I'm going to measure myself and say I'm waiting for August.
Well, September's when the NFL actually starts.
I know, like, schedule drop tonight.
August, you get that, like, that taste of football, which is cool for a little bit, and you're like, all right, let's get some actual important games. So September is what I'm realistic, because I don't want to get disappointed whenever I count down to August and August starts and I go, oh, wait, it's still another month till Colorado.
The other Brian is here. Walter from Philly, good to have you. The other Elijah, I don't trust trees. They seem shady. Well played. Montana Husker fan says, hashtag perfect timing. Cliff from Florida. Cliff is here hunting snakes. Says, so far I've gotten a 5-foot Eastern Diamondback. Cliff, you're more of a dude than I am. Also, a cottonmouth is there. Crew is in. We need a picture of crew with a corona just to make Wednesday feel like it's hump day. So Rule touches on the showcase opportunity. Elijah, that is the right approach, don't you think? It's not about payback. It's not about the mystique. It's not even about last year. It's not about it being personal. It's not about how you build your roster. It's none of these things for Nebraska, but those are some of the storylines. What it is about for Nebraska football is being 2-0, assuming 1-0 happens against UTEP. But Matt Rhule put it perfectly on Sports Nightly. I think this game is great for our fans. This is great for the game. The Nebraska-Colorado rivalry, over the years, what it all means. Obviously, they beat us last year, and then our guys have a chance early in the season to go out there on national TV and show the country the work that we've done and the team that we have. I'm excited. That should be an amazing, amazing football game. That's what it is, man. It's validation. It's validation to the fans. It's validation to the national folks that are paying attention to Nebraska and are ready to pick Nebraska in a favorable light, but it's really validation to the guys in the locker room and the head coach and his staff that, yeah, you're going to play a really talented football team with a high-profile coach across the sideline, and it kind of validates where you're at should you get out of Dodge or get out of Memorial Stadium with a win against Colorado.
Well, it validates where you're at, the work you've put in, and specifically for Matt Rhule, it validates your build, if you get what I'm saying. There was a lot of discussion. I mean, even here in Nebraska, remember that one week where there was rumors Nebraska's interested in Deion Sanders and Deion to go talk to his team. Man, I don't care about Nebraska. I think we all remember that. What was the podcast? The former coach from Ohio State, Zach Smith, was that his name?
Yeah, the former wide receiver coach that Urban protected for a while.
There's that, and then Prime gets hired. Deion, if you want to call him that. I actually still like calling him Prime. I don't care what anyone says. He got hired at Colorado. Matt Rhule gets hired at Nebraska. And it's the two stories in how you build a football program up. With Prime, it's Lamborghinis and Louis Vuitton and transfer portal. With Matt Rhule,
it's flash, bro.
With Matt Rhule, it's meat and potatoes, lines of scrimmage, recruiting high schoolers. It is two polar opposites in how you build a football program from its bottom, from rock bottom, if you will, for each of these programs. A win against Colorado for Matt Rhule specifically is validation that his way of building a football program is better than the flash and what some people call lack of substance at Colorado. That the meat and potatoes way, the lines of scrimmage, high school recruiting, being a good person.
Development.
Being a good person, I guess, to your team. Being the person that you say you are. All of that is the right way to go build a football program. That's what's at stake for Matt Rhule specifically in terms of validation. I know there's a lot with the team in terms of where you are, but with Matt Rhule, it's, hey, I know that you had all the national attention, but my way of building a football program is still the right way.
Well, and there's a lot of folks that will agree that you need to invest in the talent you're bringing in, coach them up, get them ready, and let them go play. But the narrative was on its ear a year ago after the Buffs start 3-0 and they're ranked with this quick fix method. And then it got into a national discussion of, well, why not do it Deion's way if you can? Well, the whole thing is sustainability. And what Rule and company want to show is the sustainability. The sustainability of not just having a good year or a year where Nebraska's back on the national landscape and wins some big ball games, but they do it year after year after year, because that is what Nebraska fans, yeah, they want a breakthrough year for sure, but they want sustained success that was made to look far, far, far too easy. Montana Husker fan checks in, it really boils down to potheads versus beer drinkers. That is so good.
The age-old question.
Do you like Jack Daniels or do you want some Bud? Pretty good. Let's sneak in a couple of comments from Rule from the Greg McElroy podcast that was earlier this week. We'll have more time for Matt Rule and his comments in the 440 segment in 525. But the topic of improved quarterback play, this is so key because there's a high likelihood your freshman five-star phenom is going to be the guy that gets the nod, wins the job. Just our speculation, of course. But when it comes to improved quarterback play, all right, go get your dude at quarterback, but how about you help him out? Get some of those pieces around him. Rule was asked about getting the right pieces around your quarterback.
I think it's everything. You know, I think if you want to ask your quarterback to be one of the best players, he can't try to do things outside of himself. He's got to stay within himself, let the game come to him, and just distribute the ball and make good decisions and trust the people around them. And so whether it was really bulking up our offensive line and bulking up our protection, whether it was going out and getting weapons, at the receiver position, tight end position, and running back position. And kind of what happened to us last year, Greg, I mean, we lost three receivers, season-ending injuries. We put a bunch of freshmen out there, and they played their way through it. You know, guys like Jalen Lloyd, Malachi Coleman, they played through the highs and lows of being a true freshman. And now, in the spring, you know, they know what to expect. And so you see them making big plays. We bring in Isaiah Nayor. We bring in Jamal Banks, two really accomplished players as older players. And what we have now is we have a receiver room that we think is 8, 9, 10 guys strong that can go out and win in the Big Ten.
So that is so important to your offensive line, your run game, your receiver room. And all those things are going to help your young or all three quarterbacks are technically young, but are they two freshmen, or is it your incumbent that went 5-3 that's really worked his butt off to be a better all-around quarterback, a thrower? Brian checks in as well. Walter has some stats on Colorado. CU ranked 130th in rushing offense with 69 yards per game last season. I love Walter checking in with some of the stats. A little bit more from Rule. What's up?
Let's also note Nebraska was outside the top 120 in passing offense. I don't think Nebraska is going to be there this year. A lot can change in one offseason. Mm-hmm,
for sure.
Did Colorado make an emphasis of improving their rushing attack? No, but a lot can still change in an offseason.
They got the Ohio State kid. Are they going to hand it to him? Is the question. Yeah. Or is it 60 pass attempts for Shadur? More on Dylan Raiola, and let's sneak in his comfort level that Rule talked about.
Well, you know, he was raised in a football family. Start there, right? You know, his grandfather, you know, played at, you know, the University of Miami. His dad obviously was a 14-year pro in Detroit. You know, a great, great, great offensive lineman. His uncle Donnie, who works for us, played offensive line in Wisconsin, and then in the NFL. So that trickles down to everybody. His sister Taylor just finished up playing, you know, volleyball at TCU. So it's an athletic family. It's a football family. And every conversation, you know, in that family, it's never, you know, it's always about ball. And when it's about ball, it's about, hey, getting better every day. You know, understand to play 14 years in the NFL, you have to have a process and an approach that doesn't, you know, change with the winds. And so Dylan, to me, comes in as a young player, but, you know, he understands that it's a 24-hour a day deal to be the starting quarterback at a place like Nebraska. So I think that background has helped him walk into here in an extremely mature way. And, you know, he wants to be a pro. He doesn't want to just walk in and learn the pass plays. He wants to know how to flip the protections and what are the run checks. You know, he's up early in the morning. He's working at it all the time. And so I think what you saw in the spring game, I think you saw a guy that's prepared, a guy that's confident. And I'll be honest with you, Greg, I think also the headset has helped those guys a lot. You know, I mean, being able to walk guys through it, you know, and being able to say, hey, you know, here's the play. Hey, remember now, if they give you man, don't be afraid to go to this. Hey, if you see that. So I think just that constant communication.
So good stuff from Matt Rhule. We'll get plenty of his thoughts, specifically what this new Big Ten will entail. What do you have to be across this league? Great take from Rhule. We'll hear some more great takes from Mike Babcock. Hail Varsity and Herd At Sports on the way. We're powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for hanging out. Hail Varsity with you, midweek edition, powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbert, we welcome in Mr. Husker Football. It is Mike Babcock with Hail Varsity and Herd At Sports. At MD Babs on Twitter is where you follow him. Read him with Hail Varsity and Herd At Sports. Can get his biweekly newsletter. Just email to Mike at mikeb@herdatsports.com. Babbers, what do you know? Is it raining your end of town?
Yeah, it has been. It's kind of let up a little bit now, but it came down pretty good. I'm glad I didn't go try to mow today.
Yeah, you might as well put off mowing for another day.
but
Babbers is in the running for best yard in Lincoln. I love driving by Babbers' house. I honk at him every time, and he waves, and I love it. So if you were to rank Nebraska fans' disdain, order 1, 2, and 3, Miami, Texas, Colorado, the ranking goes in what order, according to Mike Babcock?
I would say Texas.
Okay, over. Okay.
Colorado and Miami.
Okay. Okay.
If you would have asked me 3 years ago, I think I might put Miami over Colorado, but based on the last three seasons, Colorado may have jumped Miami in my book. And you guys have seen a lot more Husker football than me, and you have the history, so maybe I'm off there. But, like, in my early childhood, there's the one, what was it, 2005 embarrassing Colorado performance. But other than that, like, Colorado is kind of an afterthought in the season. And I know that's because I didn't make it through the 90s, but Colorado, even in my generation, has jumped up into that top three within the past couple of years because of Coach Sanders.
Well, and you've got some recency there, and that's healthy for sure because Nebraska's had some fun home and homes. You don't get to see Texas anymore. It ended sour times two against Bevo. And then you got all those Orange Bowls, Mike, that you were at with Nebraska and Miami until the good one in the 95 Orange Bowl, and then the so long, fare thee well for really, quite frankly, both programs in that Rose Bowl.
Yeah, that's true. The thing about Colorado, I remember when Bill McCartney came there, and you know, we still had the Skyriders tour then, and we were in Colorado, and Bill McCartney said that he was making Nebraska, he was designating Nebraska as Colorado's official rival. And then there was talk later about how McCartney, you couldn't even have a red car. There was no red around the Colorado locker room. And initially it looked like a bad choice for him, but then things got rolling. And, you know, and I've said this before, but he realized that to be successful in the old Big Eight, what you had to do is play the way the best teams played offensively. In other words, Oklahoma ran that wishbone. You needed to run some kind of option. Nebraska ran option and was successful. And Colorado became successful when it had that offense that kind of ran with an option type approach.
The I-bone.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, that's kind of where the Colorado thing got magnified a little bit, because if you go back far enough, you know, Colorado wasn't doing very much against Nebraska there for a stretch, but when McCartney got there and got things squared away, yeah, it became a pretty good rivalry, what he designated. So I would put Miami close to second there, certainly. For me, Texas has to be at the top.
Mike, in your opinion, does Nebraska have a number one uncontested rivalry right now? Like, everyone knows this is Nebraska's rival. And I asked this question, it comes on the heels of a brief conversation we had at the end of the show yesterday about my favorite soccer team, Tottenham. There was big drama yesterday. Their rivals would win the league if they were to go on and win their soccer game yesterday. They lose, the fans are happy. It led to drama. Why are you rooting against your own team? That's the nature of rivalry in English soccer, is you'll root against your own team in order so that your rivals don't achieve great success. And that's a little bit far. I know the American sports model is a little bit different, doesn't quite fall in those same lines. But does Nebraska have a rivalry anywhere close to that right now? Do you look at Iowa as being the biggest rival, as KG says in our stream? Who is Nebraska's rival right now? Because that was a big thing for Colorado during their build in the 90s or in late 80s, is establishing a rival. Does Nebraska even have one?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think Iowa, you know, whether you want it or not, I think that's kind of what that's become, is that Nebraska, Iowa, you play on Black Friday, you know, it's Nebraska gets frustrated by Iowa in a lot of ways. So, yeah, I think that that's probably the one that I would say that you would designate as a rival within the conference. You know, you got to have somebody.
Mike Babcock's with us from Hail Varsity at MD Babs on Twitter. Mike, you wrote yesterday about Jamal Lord's performance against Texas in 2002 in your newsletter this week, the historical newsletter, and what a ball game for Jamal, running the football, throwing the football, and almost a chance to knock off number 7. It didn't happen. This kind of leads into the supporting cast, my words, not any quarterback's words, for his offensive line or his skill guys. But we played that clip of Rhule in segment one. He was asked by McElroy about the pieces around the quarterback. You go get a good one, the guy should be able to do a lot with that talent, but talent can only take you so far. Do you like what so far you see Nebraska has surrounding either Harburg, Raiola, or Danny Kaye?
Well, yeah, and like Coach Rhule said, you know, the receiver room, you lost 3 receivers last year. You lost in the third game, you lost your top 2 running backs. I mean, going into the season, they thought Anthony Grant was going to be the number one guy, but during fall camp, it ended up being Gabe Irvin Jr. and Ramir Johnson were number one and number 2, and Grant was 3. So you lose your top 2 running backs, you lose your 3 of your top receivers, and, you know, you're taking away pieces of the puzzle that are there now. And so you feel like, well, this has got to be better. If people can stay healthy, you know, Gabe Irvin is there. Ramir is there. They brought in Dante Dowdell. They feel good about Emmett. Johnson, he started 6 of the last 7 games. He started last year. You've got experience, so you've got some depth if people stay healthy in the running back room, and you've got depth at receiver, because some young receivers had to step in and play last year because of the injuries. So I feel like that's good. Then the question is, you know, what do you feel like when it comes to discussion of the offensive line? Do you think that they've got the guys that can get it done? And you've got 2 guys that could have left for the NFL, Scott and Ben Hart. They decided to come back. So you've got an anchor to that offensive line. You hope that Teddy Prochaska is healthy this year. You feel good about that. So you've got pieces, I think, to help out whoever emerges as the starting quarterback. And, you know, again, we've talked about this, but it's probably going to be Dylan Raiola. You don't bring in a five-star guy and then he doesn't start, but there's going to be competition in the fall. You hope it's real competition.
Mike, I've said it for a couple years now. The position group on the team that you can follow that the team will go as far as this position group can take them has been the offensive line. Does that still hold true this year with a somewhat revamped-looking offense, particularly at quarterback? Or is there another position group that you look at as being kind of the paramount position group that if they perform well, it's a good season for the Huskers. If they perform poorly, Nebraska can't go too far. Is there a group like that this year, such as I've seen with the offensive line for a couple years now?
You know, Elijah, I think it always starts with the offensive line for your offense. You've got to have an offensive line. They got to get the job done. They've got to protect the quarterback. They've got to open some holes for the running backs. And, you know, if you don't have that, it becomes a difficult situation. And that was the example there with Jamal Lord. I think that he didn't have the pieces around him, probably beginning with effectively up front with the offensive line, although he ran for a lot of yardage, that's for sure. I think it starts with the offensive line. And on defense, it's the guys up front, the defensive line.
Walter from Philly just wants us to know that he has lots of hate when we're talking about kind of pecking order of dislike with some of Nebraska's teams they've had on their schedule, Colorado, Missouri, Texas, Miami, Penn State. That's what Walter says. My stream has frozen, so if you want to take that down, Elijah, there we go. We're going to get it fixed now.
Yeah, Missouri. Remember the Antlers?
They are legendary. I saw them exiled many times in the rafters of the Bob Devaney Sports Center. The urban legend is that they somehow abducted a little red in the game against Missouri in 97, the infamous flea kicker game, and little red maybe barely made it out alive. You have more stories, Babbers, about the Antlers?
There's the basketball one where Kent Pavelka is trying to announce a game and he has to get underneath the table because they're throwing stuff on the draft. Number one, I mean, that's not even a legend. That's a real story. That really happened. The story was that they would get the phone numbers of Nebraska athletes and they would call them up and make threats and so forth, and they'd throw things on the field. Yeah, that was quite a – I wouldn't take pride in that. If I were the University of Missouri, I wouldn't take pride in a group like that because I think they crossed the line too many times.
Get Markowski going on the Antlers.
Crossing the line is that's the history of student sections in college football, though. If you don't like that, you don't like college sports.
It's one thing to dress up and be in the boneyard and scream your head off. It's quite another to, chuck debris at a legendary play-by-play man. Does it surprise you they're from Missouri?
That's from Jason, not from Schmitty.
That's from Jason. Yeah, exactly. Babbers, what do you got coming up here in the newsletter? What you working on?
Well, I kind of a follow-up to the Jamal Lord one. Another guy that I think gets overlooked is Jerry Godowski. And part of that is that he made a decision not to redshirt when he was here. And as a result, he basically played one season. If he had redshirted, there's no telling what he would have accomplished that second year based on the momentum he built up the 1 year that he played.
Mike, we'll check in next week. Always fun to chat. Thanks for the time, bud.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
We were talking about ranking your most hated / disliked teams. And in that order, Babbers is like, it's got to be Texas, there's Colorado, and then there's Miami. Miami's faded a little bit with time, depending on your age. KG says, I don't like them as much as Texas. He's referring to Iowa, I believe. Iowa's kind of the new, I don't want to say hate, but they're the team you want to beat at the end of the year. Reminder about your friends at the Supernovas, incredible pro volleyball, your hometown team in Omaha. The Supernovas locked in their spot for the inaugural Pro Volleyball Federation Championship. That gets going tonight in the great city of Omaha, tonight and May 18th at the CHI Center. Get your tickets. Be a part of it. Watch the Supernovas battle it out for the best of PVF supremacy. And $1 million. That's quite a price tag there. You can get all the sessions you want or single match tickets now. Log on, supernovas.com. Secure your tickets today. Be a part of history and get there. Get front and center at CHI to see the Supernovas tonight and on the 18th. Who's on the line?
We go to Dave, who has a Missouri football story.
All right, Dave, talk to me here about Missouri. How are you?
Good, good. Quite a few years ago, I was fortunate enough to get free tickets to a Kansas-Missouri game at Arrowhead Stadium. And they were both pretty good. This is when Mark Mangino was coaching Kansas.
07, and, yes.
Okay, but it was at Arrowhead, so it was a big game. Mm-hmm. We got free tickets, so two of my friends and I, well, we'll go down and watch it. It should be a good game. And it's about halfway through the third quarter, and I don't remember the score. But the Missouri fans are already getting chippy. They're already throwing stuff. And we're below the upper level, so we're in a prime spot to get stuff dumped on us. And I told my buddies, I said, if Missouri loses this game, it's going to get real ugly. And if they win the game, it's probably going to get real ugly. So we walked out about halfway through the third quarter, and I don't remember even who won now, but... But yeah, we're going to stay for the end of that one.
Dave, I think that Missouri team finished fourth or fifth in the country. I think that KU team finished. They won an Orange Bowl. I think they went 12-1 that year with Tlaib at cornerback, and they put up 70 on Nebraska in 07. But I think KU won. I'm going to check my records. But you just said screw it. We're going to Westport. We're going to be safe there.
We were football fans, but we weren't that big of fans to get stuff thrown on us.
Yeah, I've never been to Columbia.
This was at Arrowhead, so it was kind of a neutral site, but it was still going to get nasty, I believe.
Yeah, I remember them doing that. Dave, thanks for listening. Thanks for the phone call, bud. I appreciate it. Yeah, Mizzou finished the year 12-2 that year, number 4 in the country. KU went 12-1, 7th in the country. And it's... Yeah, that was a banner year for both squads.
Who is KU's only loss that year?
Beat Oklahoma's 07 team beat Missouri twice, once in the regular season, once in the Big 12 championship game. And KU's schedule that year, their only loss, I'm pulling it up right now.
Missouri.
They did. Okay, they did lose.
The only loss was to Missouri, November 24th, 2007, 36-28.
Yep, and that was at Arrowhead. That was strange times in the world of the Big 12.
And for a lot of Husker fans, they thought that was rock bottom, that 2007 year whenever Nebraska was 76-39 was mm-hmm. the final score. A lot of Husker fans, I'm pretty sure, thought that was rock bottom. Oh, boy, it got worse.
Just the week before, Nebraska was rolling Texas in Austin.
But Kansas. I remember that being the reaction. Kansas
Mo
just
Purify went off that game. That was the introduction to the Joe Gans era. As he went in and played a hell of a game, the Cosgrove defense did not.
76 points from Kansas. Yeah, uh-huh. That's an understatement. Uh-huh. 10 touchdowns.
Is this basketball? They got another fast break going?
Let's check that, actually. Did the football team or basketball team score more points against Nebraska for Kansas in 2007?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know. Let's hear from Rule real quick when it comes to the right time to name your starter, cut four. As, again, we go back to the McElroy podcast earlier this week from Matt Rule. Just a great 20-plus minutes with Rule and McElroy. And how about that timeline here?
I think we'll know when we know. And I know that sounds crazy, but what I've liked is when one player has had a really good day, the other two guys kind of come in the next day with their hair on fire and they have a good day. And at the end of the day, I've got to elevate the quarterback play. And this, having competition elevates it. I don't care what anybody says. It makes you come in every day and you know you're fighting for your life, you're fighting for your job. And so to me, that back and forth give me training camp for that. As we get to that first ball game, I think whoever goes on the field will be way more prepared because there's no days off right now. If you have a bad day, someone's going to jump past you. They're all three elite competitors.
Jan has checked in. Tiger Shark Diver in. Jason also here in the stream. Hail Varsity YouTube, where you can watch the show and check us out. Comments and question of the day. Your most hated team. What's your order? Your top three. And listen, the competition thing is being lived out, Elijah. That's important. It's not just a great talking point to continue to lure big-time recruits here and get a yes, but you're seeing it in action, not only in spring, but you'll see it during summer with those guys throwing and working together with one another, and you'll fast-forward it here to fall camp, and they'll know when they know, and then you move forward.
By the way, I've done some quick research here behind the scenes. Nebraska played Kansas twice during the regular season in that 07-08 year. Kansas basketball team put up 79 points in the first meeting and 84 in the second meeting. So the Kansas basketball team still outscored the 76 both times. In the postseason, though, the Big 12 tournament, Kansas only put up 64 in a 64-54 win. So the Kansas basketball team still has supremacy over the football team, but 76 points from Kansas football is still something
special. Yeah, Nebraska fans, and I was covering the team that season, and it was just funky, right? Where you put up enough points to win a lot of ball games. It got off on the wrong foot with the USC obliteration on ABC night game. And then you almost lose the following week to Western Kentucky or somebody of that ilk. They miss a field goal at the buzzer, and it never got better. Steve Peterson was whacked October 15th. Nebraska played their hearts out and lost to Texas. The stadium emptied out against A&M. Then Oklahoma State came in and absolutely dirt rolled you. And then you had the Kansas 77-point marathon. And then the Buffs put up 65 on you in Boulder. It was a running tab. The old cab, right? The cab meter's always running, whether you're parked or driving.
You know what's funny? That season was pretty much my first true introduction to Husker football. Being an 8-year-old, I'd say.
How do the adults around you take it?
They're like, don't worry, this isn't normal. And then throughout the course of my life, I've found that was the normal.
Huh. We'll wind it down in hour one. Evan Bland coming up. More from Matt Rhule. It's Hail Varsity powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for hanging out. It's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, thanks for your time tuning in. And you have Auburn message boards freaking out. Nebraska's targeted offensive tackle, Shoal, seems to be there's some momentum picking up with Nebraska. As you have War Eagle message board losing their mind with the fact that things may be trending for Shoal and Nebraska. Good story here from Chad Simmons of On3 on four-star linebacker Dawson Merritt. Now, you know Nebraska got Latif. They're working hard to get Sanders, the number one offensive tackle. They're at least in that conversation. A few weeks ago, you had Merritt focused on Bama, Missouri. He's out of the Kansas City region, Nebraska, Oklahoma. You had that unofficial back in Tuscaloosa a few weeks back and had his official visit to Lincoln. He has crossed Missouri and Oklahoma off the list. He's out of Blue Valley, Kansas. It's down to Alabama or Nebraska. You had some social media postings by Merritt of most of the Bama staff showing up to his home. He told On3, quote, it'll be Alabama or Nebraska. I've canceled my official visits to Missouri or Oklahoma. He's scheduled to have that official visit with Alabama on June 7th. And he'll come back and take some time to think about things and should be ready to commit sometime in June. How about Coach Dvorak? How about Coach White? How about Nebraska being able to not only talk a great game, but show a great game with the spring game extravaganza that has wowed a lot of people, but also just the time that Nebraska's coaches have put in this strategy of one-on-one time around the entire staff, and then also sending staff out, hey, what's for lunch, to show up at homes, is really cool. And Nebraska, they're in the running, but it's not just a nice consolation here, Elijah. Nebraska's shown the ability to close.
It's toe-to-toe. I mean, they've proven it with guys like Carter Nelson, Dylan Raiola. They've gone toe-to-toe, and I know you have some advantages built into those recruitments against the Georgias and Notre Dames and Alabamas and Oregon.
Your record
and USC's
says you
of the
shouldn't.
World, but your record says you shouldn't, exactly. You're starting to gain an advantage. This cycle, you're seeing them go toe-to-toe again with these same schools. Alabama, Georgia, Clemson. The list goes on and on with Schultz, Auburn. And one quick note on Schultz. I like Broderick Schultz because he's a multi-sport athlete playing football and basketball and involved in the theater program.
Yeah.
Shout out to Broderick Schultz. I'm not sure if he was the president of his choir like me, but I think it really shows a well-rounded nature that's very important.
Theater is what sells you, not pile driving somebody.
In all seriousness there, it does show like a kid's time management ability to be able to be involved in doing all these things at such a high level. Shows a kid's work ethic, and it shows a kid's ability to
shows
be able
his
to,
brains. Yeah. He can remember all the lines to the play and also the playbook, which is nice.
Oh,
so
good.
Here's my thing. Did Oklahoma come in on this guy? Oklahoma's printed offensive tackles to the NFL the last 10 years. They're not even in the running. Maybe he just wants to get out of Oklahoma. I don't know. I mean, Auburn, I get. Texas Tech, I get. But I would think Oklahoma would be hot and heavy on a kid like Scholl. But good on Nebraska
maybe
for being
like
there.
Peter.
Hour 2 is coming up. It's Hail Varsity.
The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Great to have you back. It's Hour 2. It's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. We welcome in Evan Bland with the Omaha World Herald at Evan Bland OWH. Give him a follow on Twitter. Great coverage all season long with Husker football, recruiting, and always great stuff on Nebraska baseball. Evan, you headed up to East Lansing or just going to check in from afar, my friend?
I am not headed up to East Lansing this weekend. No, I'll be hanging out, watching it on BTN this weekend, and we'll see if they have anything to celebrate by the end.
That's for sure something on Nebraska fans' minds, how do things get done. And we'll get to some football thoughts in a moment. Want to stay with baseball, though. And, I mean, you just had a brutal series if you're Michigan State with Minnesota. You blew a, God, what was it, 12-2 lead? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And goes the old gasoline can exploding on the mound. But take me back to last weekend as you were getting ready to go talk to Coach Bolt post-game Friday and then fast forward to Sunday about 2:30 with what Nebraska did. Have you figured this team out, this Husker baseball squad?
Well, the good news is there are no more traditional midweeks, so you got to feel good about that part of it. It's a resilient team. Like, I think that's a really good way to describe it. Like, they have adversity, things strike, midweeks happen, bullpens blow leads, but like, they've done a really good job of not letting it carry over into the next game. I think their longest losing streak this season is 3 games, and they matched that with that South Dakota State loss and then the Friday loss, but the way they bounced back was really impressive with the clutch hitting that they got, with some pitchers who haven't been heroes traditionally at Nebraska becoming heroes. Caleb Clark, Drew Christo, and Jackson Brockett all coming through in those last two games. So it was a huge pivotal weekend. I mean, there's no way around it. You look at how they lost Wednesday and Friday. Their RPI dropped, plummeted from 20th to 38th at that point. And if you lose Saturday, Sunday, say you get swept, you're quickly on the at-large bubble. And so they were able to respond. They're back down to, I think, 31. So they're safely an at-large team at this point. And it sets up a really exciting weekend where if they do what they've done all season, which is win a weekend, then the worst they can do is be a 2 seed. And if Purdue is able to maybe do Nebraska solid with a couple wins over Illinois, which isn't a great road team, then it's quite possible a Big Ten title or shared championship is coming up this weekend.
That was going to be my next question, Evan. Say Illinois drops one, Nebraska gets a sweep tiebreaker. How would that work in a potential Big Ten championship?
Well, if it's just between Nebraska and Illinois, since they didn't play each other, it comes down to Big Ten common opponents. And in that case, that's already sealed. Nebraska's already has that tiebreaker. Yeah. The fact that they're both playing series this weekend don't affect that tiebreaker. So a tied league record would mean a shared Big Ten regular season title, but it would also mean that Nebraska gets the 1 seed in Omaha next week. Of course, Nebraska could still be the outright champs if they say they sweep and Illinois loses the series at Purdue. That's also quite possible. And then you have some other kind of long shot scenarios where Michigan or Indiana sweep the other team and maybe Purdue takes a couple and Nebraska gets swept. But really, I mean, if you stick to kind of what the theme for this team has been this year and they win the weekend, they'll at worst be a 2 seed and I think absolutely be in the mix. So odds are either Illinois or Nebraska or maybe both will be celebrating a title here on Saturday or Sunday. Or I guess Friday or Saturday.
Evan, what's more important for Nebraska this weekend? Is it that chance at a Big Ten title, getting there, getting that done, getting the sweep? Or is it more about how it looks as you try to build some momentum into a postseason where if you get 3 solid starting pitching performances, but say you go 2-1, you don't win the Big Ten title, is that still a win as you head into postseason play?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's all out in front of you still in terms of making a tournament run. Like, I didn't really realize this or remember this, but Nebraska hasn't won a tournament league championship since they last went to a College World Series in 2005. So that would be a big deal for that team to do that. They don't need it. They don't need the automatic NCAA berth that would come with that, but that'd be a cool momentum thing. But yeah, I think if you win the series and say Illinois takes care of business on its end and you're the 2 seed, like, you can live with that because you're absolutely headed to the NCAA tournament at this point. You know, you look around and see, I think D1 baseball today projected them to go to Oklahoma, which would be like a 10 or so national seed. That's a place Nebraska could go and make some noise. I mean, they played Oklahoma earlier this year and came down to the last strike. So I think they're in a good position. I don't see how they play themselves out of a regional 2 seed at this point. I think the hosting conversation is still settled, despite how they responded last weekend. I just don't see them falling any further than that either. So I think it's all about momentum. Are you healthy? Are your starters feeling good? Is your bullpen set in terms of roles and kind of knowing what guys are and who you can trust? And I think if that's the case, then Nebraska's got the talent and the confidence and maybe the resiliency to make things pretty interesting into the NCAA tournament.
Evan, Brumbaugh's been big for this team. What's his status look like heading into this weekend, or do you try and get him rested up for Omaha?
Well, he played Friday and Saturday, coming back from the hand injury. He sat out Sunday with some soreness. That's what Will Bolt said today. And so he hasn't swung a bat this week, sort of with the idea of saving bullets, so to speak, mm-hmm. for the weekend. So they're going to test him out when they get to East Lansing tonight and see how that goes. And I think the thought is that he'll be ready to play at least some of the weekend. coming back from that hand injury. And then, you know, next week, I imagine as long as he can play through any discomfort, it doesn't sound like it's an injury that can get any worse from playing. So, I think Nebraska would be happy to have him. He's been really good atop the lineup, kind of had some sneaky speed, good defensively. And, you know, worst case, if he can't go, Rhett Stokes has been pretty good at that spot too. So I think they anticipate Brumbaugh being healthy enough to go and being a regular here down the stretch. But I think a lot of that probably depends on how he responds physically in the next day or two as well.
Evan, want to go to football here. And earlier in the week, you had the Colorado-Nebraska kickoff time drop 6:30 on September 7th. Nebraska fans jacked for it. Matt Rhule talked about it last night on the network about the opportunity. And what's your reaction to the Buffs under the lights?
It's going to be fun, man. It had me thinking of some of the other great crowds in Memorial Stadium, especially, just games that mean stuff. 2009 Oklahoma, 2014 Miami, just those games against rivals, against teams that Nebraska fans love to hate, and just how electric that is. And it kind of reminds me a little bit, maybe not in terms of being at night, but of that 2019 Colorado game where it just kind of felt like that was maybe a moment. Like if Nebraska had won that game, like maybe they take off a little bit and some of the vision is validated. I kind of feel like there's some of those vibes with Colorado here coming in early September. Like you mentioned, I mean, there's been so much optimism and positivity from this offseason that Colorado game is going to be the first chance to really validate some of what we've seen and heard with Dylan Raiola and whoever else is starting in that particular night. Like it just feels like a chance for fans to cut loose and have a great time and maybe be a little bit primal in their rooting for Nebraska, especially when you consider that Colorado's won three straight in the series and going to Boulder is never really a treat from a fan perspective. So it's going to be a lot of fun, man. I think under the lights, Nebraska, it still feels like a big-time atmosphere at Memorial Stadium, and especially early in the season with what Deion Sanders is doing on the other side, there's going to be some national interest for sure, too. And I think you look at just the slate of games that day, other than Texas, Michigan, like that's the one to me that maybe could be one of the biggest games of the day and be a good chance for Nebraska to show what it's becoming to the national stage.
Evan, the ideal drink, the drink of choice before a 6:30 kick between Nebraska and Colorado, there's going to be blood in the water. If you're a fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, they would recommend Riot Juice.
What is Riot Juice?
It is pure grain alcohol. That's all it is. In a gallon jug, grain alcohol, Riot Juice. I'm not sure that's Nebraska fan style. So, Evan, what is your vote for what the drink of choice should be ahead of Nebraska-Colorado to get the blood, get the juices really going?
Well, if you're personally, since I'm going to be working it, I'll give you another Always Sunny quote, and I will be drinking straight mixer, just sodas and things like that. So I'll be the mixer guy. So I don't know. I haven't tailgated in years. I'm going to leave that to the experts. But yeah, on this end, it's going to be straight mixer, and we'll see how that goes, just to keep things light and energetic.
Us radio goons are animals. We'll take care of you in the press. I'm kidding.
Well, I'm trying to think what the were they just drinking like a can of soda? And they're like, people drink mixer like this straight? Like, what are we doing?
Right. Yeah, you might be an alcoholic if. Yeah.
Poor Evan. Evan's like, yeah, I'll just do another Sprite. Sad luck. So Nebraska, Colorado, that's going to be a ton of fun. Matt Rhule touched on that and then also sat down with McElroy for a lot of different topics with his podcast. And we were touching on this in hour one, and we'll hear from Matt Rhule about it next segment. Evan, how wide open do you think the new Big Ten can be? What are you anticipating here with the new crew and kind of the old guard, and then where's Nebraska's place?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think Oregon will probably transition pretty smoothly just with its style of play and its resources and what it has. Might be the favorite next year. Ohio State obviously will be way up there. You still got to give a lot of credit to Michigan for what it's been, even though it loses a lot from its national championship team. I think around here, like, the biggest adjustment is still going to be life after the West Division and what that looks like. Like, no longer can you, win your half of a weak division and have a chance and have a crack at a Big Ten title. Like, you're going to be having to keep pace with some of these top teams over the course of a whole season. And I think in a lot of cases in the West, like, teams got a little conservative and they kind of could figure out ways to win low scoring games. I think if you're serious about contending in the Big Ten, you're going to have to take some chances and maybe reinvent yourself. And I think Nebraska's transformation under Matt Rhule is coming at just the perfect time to where, it appears they're going to be consistent. They're going to be able to retain talent. Finally, it feels like they have an identity coming. Certainly they already do on the defensive side, and I think it's coming offensively as well. So I don't think there's any reason why they can't be certainly in the top half of what this league is going to be moving forward. And we'll see beyond that what, a guy like Dylan Raiola can do to propel them, or some of the skill positions they have. I think we've talked on this show before about maybe the spots on the team you feel the most confident in right now are both lines, offensive and defensive side. And how long has it been since we've said that about Nebraska? So I think that puts them in good position. Obviously, they need to go out and do it. The bowl drought remains, but it does feel like there's a lot of reason to be optimistic that this can be an upper middle class team in the Big Ten.
Evan, as you look at what the future of the Big Ten could be with these West Coast teams coming in and what it's going to take to be near that top end of the Big Ten, can Nebraska be a hard-nosed physical football team while being pass first? Matt Rhule talked about it this week with Greg McElroy, the importance of explosive plays, winning the explosive play battle in any given game, and he looks at the potential for taking the top off a defense through a passing attack as being the way to do that. Can Nebraska be the hard-nosed physical football team offensively that Matt Rhule preaches about while still being explosive and maybe being a little more pass-first?
Yeah, I think you can thread that needle. And part of his interview, it was a good interview, but he talked about sort of finding that middle ground between minimizing mistakes but maximizing explosiveness. Because you can go into a shell and not turn the ball over but not be explosive, or you can let it all hang out and maybe get some explosive plays, but at the same time, you're turning the ball over quite a bit. So I think if you have the ability to pass and you know when to pass and when to be smart about it and when to take the top off if you see a defense in quarters or if you see them playing press man or whatever, then take that opportunity and do that. And I don't know that Nebraska's had the ability to do that consistently in the past, especially from its quarterback. And so, I think you could do that on that side. And then defensively, I mean, they have a culture that's pretty established after last year. A lot of veterans that are back, even positions that will have new starters. They have guys that played a lot there, especially at linebacker and even the defensive line. So I think you can walk that line. I think a lot of it's just about talent upgrade and identity, kind of knowing what you're trying to accomplish. And I think Nebraska is well on its way in both regards.
Evan Bland with us from the Omaha World Herald. Follow him on Twitter at Evan Bland, OWH is where you go there. Read him with omaha.com, and he'll have all sorts of updates and thoughts on Husker baseball and plenty going on. Evan, real quick here, about 15 seconds. Are you on commit watch at all this weekend for Nebraska football?
I mean, you never say never. I wouldn't say this weekend necessarily, but we're getting to the point, man, where camp season's starting, official visits are starting. I would think, we're going to be seeing some action here pretty soon. If not this weekend, then certainly in the next couple weeks.
That'll be good. Evan, take care. We'll check in again soon. Great stuff. Thanks for your time, man.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
There he is, Evan Bland with us on Hail Varsity. We'll hear more from Matt Rhule and get you locked in that way. Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager.
Hail Varsity Radio is live. Now, back to Schmitty.
Schmitty's a great guy, but he don't have a brain.
And Elijah.
You want me to speak?
We're not pointing you yet.
On Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. Shout out locally as we're broadcasting from Lincoln. You hear us on AM 590, Omaha's ESPN, KFOR Lincoln, Central Nebraska Superstation, Kearney Hastings, Grand Island, and News Talk 900 in Columbus. Lincoln Northwest, eliminated earlier today, but what a postseason run for a new school in Class B. And they made their way to SportsCenter Top 10. Really, really cool. Great coverage by our friend Kevin Suits with 10-11. And that was just a cool scene. And cool scene to see a lot of juniors' buddies that are over at Northwest. Really cool to see Southwest in their run as well. And East has advanced to the state championship game to try and defend their title. Malcolm and Norris. So A, B, and C are set up.
Well, and let it be known, because I think we can kind of bring this back to Husker baseball, Lincoln Northwest, the story. Sometimes all it takes is getting hot at the right time.
Sure.
And they got some great pitching performances. Their bats got hot at the right time, and they gave Norris all they could handle earlier this morning. They took down Waverly once in a district, once in state. That team was a team that just got hot at the right time. They played a pretty difficult schedule this year, but I don't think anyone was expecting what they put together this year. Fantastic close to the season. And I think if you want to relate it back to Husker baseball, that's what I'm going to say. You see it sometimes in the MLB. You see it a lot of times in college baseball. You think back to Ole Miss's run to a College World Series title a couple years ago. That was a season that nobody down in Oxford thought was going to end up in Omaha. And they end up lifting the trophy, winning the whole dang thing. So sometimes in baseball, all it takes is getting hot at the right time. And I think even more evidence from the movie Major Leagues.
Right. You just need some cardboard cutout that says, "You guys stink." reminder to get buckled up. Use your seatbelt. It saves lives. It prevents injuries. Only if properly worn, make it click. A message from the NDOT Highway Safety Office. Let's hear a little bit more from Matt Rhule. Let's sit down with Greg McElroy of Always College Football. So, Evan touched on this. This is the full clip from Rhule this week with McElroy on that balance. You've got quarterbacks. You want them to go spin it. You want them to go rip it. You want them to throw it to the right team. You can emphasize turnovers and taking care of the football, but you can't play scared. You can't play in a shell. Here's Matt Rhule on that balancing act.
Ryan Billick years ago came up with the stat. He called it toxic differential. Other people sometimes call it double positive. But basically, you know, hey, we want to win the explosive play battle, but also the turnover battle. Like,
yeah.
If you win one without the other, you can be really conservative, and you won't beat yourself, but you won't be explosive. And you can be really explosive, but also beat yourself. And so finding that balance, and I think it's really the key to coaching today, is getting players to not worry about the result, but just stay in the moment. Like, hey, how does this play work? You know, you're throwing four verticals, man. Like, it's a one high post safety. We're gonna take three in the hitch, man, and we're ripping the seam opposite the lead of the safety. And you know, if your guys are doing what they're trained to do, then we'll live with the results. If all of a sudden now, instead of taking three in a hitch, and they take three and two hitches, or they pump fake and try to run and they throw, that's where we're trying to coach that away. You know, we're trying to say, hey, do exactly what you're trained to do and trust yourself. And, you know, you get out on a scramble, try to make a big play, throw the ball down the field, throw the ball out, you know, along the sideline, man, but don't throw the ball back across your body. That's not what we're trained to do. And so I had the unfortunate pleasure of coaching against Tom Brady when I was in Carolina. And it's like, man, you'd sit there and to me, you'd be like, hey, okay, we're going to play cover two. He's going to check the ball down. We know that. We're going to play cover two here. He's going to check the ball down. It's like he just absolutely frustrated you with his precision and his execution. And so I don't want our players playing in fear. I want them to play with unbelievable confidence, but the confidence has to come from their execution, their precision, knowing that they're going to do in the moment exactly what they're trained to do and do it with no fear.
So, well put, there's the balancing act, go make a play, but do what we've taught you.
It seems like a more eloquent way and a more refined way of saying the no fear of failure mantra that we heard from Scott Frost and his staff.
But live it.
It's different, and it's a more nuanced way to say that, in a way that seems to make more sense to me for younger football players on how you go out there and perform with no fear of failure. It's about supreme self-confidence. Mm-hmm. And rather than being fearful of the result, knowing that the result will be in your favor if you do your job. It's a more nuanced way of saying that, and I wasn't behind the scenes. Maybe it was more nuanced, the message from Coach Frost and his staff. But that's what I hear in that, is you're a young quarterback. The lack of fear does not come from unbridled overconfidence. It comes from the confidence through preparation to know that if you go out there and do your job, the other 10 guys around you will do their job, and the results you'll live with.
It's trust. I mean, it's trust to the other guy. Let's get to the identity part. What are you going to have to be in the Big Ten? We've talked a little bit about how wide open it is. Evan Bland is right. Babers is right. It's going to be fun, but it ain't going to be easy in the Big Ten. You look at Nebraska, and you look at the new West Coast. You look at the existing powers. So a new Big Ten is going to do what? Will it alter teams' identity? And this is what Coach Rhule talked about and has carved out that'll be a difference.
I think two things that the new additions will do to the league. I think two things are going to come into play that maybe don't come into play in any other league. That's travel and weather. You know, I'm from Pennsylvania. I went to Penn State. I coached all over the country. I had no idea what it was going to be like trying to coach on a Saturday with 30-mile-an-hour winds in your face every Saturday, whether it's here or Champlain or, you know, Champagne or whatever. Like the weather is a significant thing in the Big Ten. And so, you know, you play Iowa and they're playing the field position game, and, you know, people all across, maybe they don't understand it. They don't understand the elements. They don't understand the cold. They don't understand the wind. And so it'll be interesting to see the West Coast teams, you know, as they come to the Midwest and how they handle those things. It'll be interesting to see the teams, how they handle going across the country. So
yeah.
I think Lincoln Riley is one of the greatest offensive minds that there is. And he's going to do what he does. And it's going to be a challenge. He's going to find a way to score points. I think what you'll see is, you know, maybe the league looks a little bit like the NFL, where, you know, the West Coast teams, maybe they are like, you know, the AFC West, and they play one way and the teams in the middle play another way. Right. And then as we come to play each other, scheduling and when you're playing somebody and the weather and all that is really going to matter. It makes for a very interesting league. I just know for me, building what we're trying to do here, I always have to take into account the wind. I always have to take into account weather and field position and things that kind of matter when you're in this part of the country. So I'm excited about the league. I'm excited about the 18 teams. You know, you're playing 9 really good teams every year. But I think what will happen is I think you'll see like a different pockets of teams playing different ways, and scheduling will matter more now more than ever as we move forward.
Who do you get? When do you get them? Right? Nebraska gets Cali flavor in November. They host UCLA. That's probably not fun for UCLA. When UCLA's traveled to Big Ten country or outside the Pac-12, it's been that third week of the season for a non-conference. Nebraska gets to go to L.A. in the Coliseum November 15th, and that's after a bye, I believe. I mean, imagine the Friday night game during the COVID year where it's 4 degrees in Piscataway, New Jersey. Nebraska found a way to win that game against Rutgers. But imagine being shipped out to Jersey on a Friday in November when it's 4 degrees. If you're Oregon or Washington, or, you know, they play in wet weather. Do they play well in cold weather? Do they play well in windy weather? It's just different climates. And the take about the AFC West is spot on. Because what do you have to be ready for?
Patrick Mahomes.
Mahomes and Kansas City can be hot, can be cold, but it's a little bit better weather, typically. But then you still got to go to Denver. You get to go to L.A., and then you're in fantasy land in Vegas, where it's a dome now. But before that, it was Oakland, where there's more wind. So got to be prepared for it all is the long and short answer.
Well, and you look at the AFC West now. You have different stylistically ways that teams want to beat you as well. With the Raiders, I know they've shipped off Josh Jacobs, but they were much more of a run-first team with Garoppolo at quarterback. Mm-hmm. Garoppolo was not going to beat you through the air. And so you got a warm day in Las Vegas in the dome, perfect weather. The next week you're going and playing Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes is going to throw the ball 400 times, 4,000 yards in one game on you. An exaggeration, clearly. But then turn around the next week, you're in Denver. It's Sean Payton, that short, quick passing attack with a power rushing game. Like, so many different styles of ways that teams want to beat you in the Big Ten West. Or, sorry, the AFC West, combined with the fact that you're getting the different weather. It's a really, really interesting and good comparison, because I think you're going to look at, as Matt Rhule said, regionality within the Big Ten. And I think different regions, we've seen it with the Big Ten West. The Big Ten West played so different than the Big Ten East. I think you're still going to see a little bit of that, but I do think you're going to see teams that come together, and you have to have a plan to beat Ohio State.
Well,
you have to have a plan to beat USC. These high-flying offenses, you have to have a plan to beat them just the same as you have to have a plan to beat the Iowas of the world.
Right. Can you figure out a way to be able to do both? And It's so specific when we talk travel and we talk weather. It sounds boring, but it's very specific and true. Are you going? Where are you going? And when are you going? And what's your travel log look like? And how do you adapt? Again, do you adapt or do you die?
Wait, and there's going to be adaptation, but it's funny, even with all this changing in the Big Ten, how teams are going to want to beat you, it's still going to start with the lines of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. How do you beat down one of those defenses that flies around and makes it really tough for you to throw the football? Run. A powerful offensive line mm-hmm. that can run the football, even against a team that, oh, they like to stop the run. We're going to be better at you than running the football. Offensively, they like to throw the ball around the yard. You can invest in defensive backs, or you can invest in a killer pass rush that gives a quarterback no time. Like it's still going to start on the lines of scrimmage, as Scott says, run the damn ball.
Scott is right on. Run the damn ball. Be able to run the damn ball. Do we have time to squeeze in if Rhule is on schedule or not? Year two?
No, we do not.
We'll try and do that later on in the show. We'll do a Jock Doc on the way. Take some of your emails, chris@halevarsity.com, and I'm still kind of taken back by the old, and maybe I need to start watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes, you do. Have you not?
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen Community.
Bar none, best sitcom that's been put out in the past 15 years is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Better than The Office?
The Office started more than 15 years ago now.
Okay.
So I'm not including them, but it's up there. It's right there with them. And it might be more geared towards a younger generation. My generation loves It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The references that are made in my generation.
That's code for you old bastards may not like it.
Well, you know
what's
the premise?
What's it like?
It's these four buddies in Philly, essentially, mm-hmm. that own their own bar, and hijinks ensue because they're all a bunch of idiots.
Okay.
It's in arguably bad people.
Right.
Yeah.
Angry Philly guy.
Yes. Yeah. Angry, dumb Philly guy. They kind of play into that stereotype.
Mm. Mm. Which is just a stereotype for our Philadelphia fans out there.
Love you, Walter.
Yes. Philly is all good. Walter, you're cool. A Jock Doc's on the way. It's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Nebraska Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us. Dr. Brandon, thanks for a few minutes. How are we doing?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are good. We are good. Another wall sends another outfielder to the IL. I'll always call it DL, but the IL is what it's termed now. Jung Ho Lee, outfielder for San Francisco. Dr. Brandon dislocated his left shoulder on Sunday, crashing into the wall. He's going to check out a second opinion, but an MRI revealed structural damage. And let's go through these steps here. Why somebody would go check out a second opinion first and dive into the different avenues of structural damage when we talk about injuring a shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely a very, I think, interesting topic. We see lots of these kind of in the sports medicine world. So we talk, let's go kind of do our anatomy talk initially. So structurally what this means, a dislocated shoulder. So shoulder anatomically is a ball and socket joint. And essentially what happens is in the vast majority of dislocations, the ball portion slides to the front, so we call it anterior and kind of towards the bottom. And it basically slips over the top of the socket and kind of wedges itself like on the back side of the ball, wedges on the front of the socket. And that's essentially what a dislocation is. Typically they happen because of trauma. Obviously that was a traumatic injury that he had. But you do see them sometimes in patients who have super lax joints where it just kind of slips out very easily for them, kind of a whole different process there. But in our traumatic scenario here, one always has to ask the question, so what has to happen in order for that ball portion to slide all the way out? Well, what you have to think about is on the socket side, we call that the glenoid. There's a ring structure around that called the labrum. And as the ball portion runs into that and essentially transitions emotions over the top, it tends to peel off or tear the labrum off of the socket. And that's typically what happens in your dislocation events. Sometimes if it's traumatic enough, you'll chip off cartilage. You can even break part of the socket of the glenoid. And even sometimes you can tear part of the muscular structures, like, for example, a rotator cuff tear, which we tend to see in our older individuals. At any rate, that's what happened with him, is dislocation. They're talking about structural damage. I'm going to assume here it was more kind of labral injury is probably what he sustained with this. And again, there might even be some chondral or cartilage damage. We don't really know that yet. To lead to your second question, Chris, you know, why does somebody seek a second opinion on that? Well, one can do that for a variety of reasons. You know, one, it might just be maybe somebody has more expertise from a sports medicine perspective in terms of shoulders versus knees. Also, at that level, that, you know, kind of the second opinion thing, third opinion thing is a very, very common thing. It's used kind of all the time. And so his big debate at this point is going to be, one, we don't know if he's ever had a dislocation before, but I'm going to assume this is his first. And then you start to have that big talk about, do I need to fix this surgically, or can I just do rehab on this? And that's kind of the debate that I'm sure they're probably having at this moment.
Dr. Brandon, I always hear folks talk about the old shoulder injury they had back in high school or back in college, and it's still causing them issues now 30 years later. Is there a difference in the long-term health of a shoulder depending on if you just go with the rehab route or if you try to surgically fix it?
Yeah, so quite a few studies looking at that, whether, you know, it's, a lot of it's kind of age dependent. The younger you are, the higher the risk you're going to have of this coming out again. That's always our big fear, is if you do treat these non-operatively with rehab, you know, what's the re-injury risk? Some of those studies show that your chance of re-dislocating this as a young athlete is somewhere between 35 up to 50%, which is pretty darn high. There's probably somewhere even higher than that in some studies. So that's what you worry about. If you say, okay, well, if it does dislocate again and they just put it back in, pop it back into place, if you will, I can go back and play. What's the trouble with that? Well, every time that ball portion kind of slides out of joint, it dislocates. You have to think about all those structures again getting further damaged. Most importantly, the soft tissue covering over the end of the bone, the cartilage. Okay, so that every time you dislocate, you can basically tear up your cartilage, chip pieces off, and that essentially leads to kind of early arthritis, which is a big problem if you're in your 20s and now you have a really arthritic shoulder. There's no great fix for that. So I would say cartilage damage, arthritis would be our biggest concern if you don't fix this right away.
Dr. Brandon, I mean, you look at the investment by San Fran. He's with Lee, he's adjusting as a hitter from his former league, 2 home runs, 8 RBI, but he's been great in center field. But 6 years, $113 million is what, and I know that's kind of run-of-the-mill for MLB now, but what are some long-term worries here if you rush him back too quickly? And then let's translate that shoulder stability / instability to the to home plate here. How do we, if you're San Francisco, get him back and productive offensively?
Sure. And so, you know, if he opts for a non-op route, and we're just going to assume this is maybe his first dislocation, that would be reasonable. This is his left side, so his non-throwing side. This is the glove hand, from what I recall. Mm-hmm. And so non-throwing side. And so he's got a pretty good chance, if you rehab this, to get back for the season. It might not even be that long before he gets back. Obviously, we don't know the total structural damage on the MR. But he's got a pretty good chance to make it back this season if they go non-op with him, and still could come back and be a great hitter. The most important thing about this whole deal is that it's on his non-throwing side, and so he can get back, throw well, play well, and really, I think, have a nice long career despite this injury he's had, whether he does non-op or operative route. What we worry about with these is if they're on the throwing side. It's kind of a special scenario when you have this injury, like, say, a dislocation in a throwing athlete on their throwing extremity or throwing shoulder. It's a big problem, because the issue is if you go and you try to fix them, bring the labrum back together, sew it back together, fix it, you tighten up the shoulder. And then, obviously, if you tighten up the thrower's shoulder, they're never going to throw quite as hard as they did before. Velocity is important. Mechanics are important. And you tend to change those with that surgery. So that's always kind of that big debate. At a difficult injury as a throwing athlete to come back from, again, if it's on your throwing side.
It's Dr. Brandon Seifert with us here at Jock Doc Wednesday on Hail Varsity Radio. And Dr. Brandon, as he rehabs, gets himself back out there, it feels like we're always talking about baseball players running into walls, particularly in the outfield. We have Aaron Judge, the toe injury. We got this now. In your opinion, to limit re-injury risk, do you think it's time to abolish walls in baseball?
There's a great debate for you right there, Elijah. That might be a little bit above my pay grade to answer that one.
We'll just do the old one of those invisible fence up, right? I mean,
yeah, there you go, a little visible fence. Maybe one of those, like, what do they call the Zorbs, those, like, big bouncy padded balls that people get inside of. Maybe you just make a wall of a giant Zorb.
Snow fence.
I like like a dog with an invisible fence, but the shock collar on the outfielders so you know where a home run is. Like, you can't go any further. You're getting the full body shock.
So instead, the guy will bite half his tongue off. Yeah, that's a great idea.
And to be 100% real here, though, maybe widening the warning track. As players are starting to be bigger, faster, stronger out in the outfield, widen the warning track a little bit. My slow pitch softball league doesn't even have a warning track, and the amount of people I've seen slam into a fence out there has shown me the importance of the warning track. Maybe to widen that warning track by a couple of feet and give outfielders another couple steps.
That's a good idea. Look at Elijah thinking for people. It's important.
Absolutely.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us. Nebraska Orthopedic Center, Jung Ho Lee, our topic. That shoulder separation. Dr. Brandon, we'll do this again. Always fun to have you on with us. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Okay, fellas. You guys take care.
All right. There he is, Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Nebraska Orthopedic Center. Jock Doc Wednesday. That'll be posted on the podcast page. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play is where you can download the show or the segments you like. We'll wind down a Wednesday with Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on your Wednesday, Hail Varsity Radio, powered by Cornhead Lager. Big thanks to Mike Babcock from Hail Varsity, Herd at Sports, and Evan Bland. Good stuff from Matt Rule today with his sit-down with Greg McElroy. Let's squeeze in one more comment. So we tried to get it in, couldn't quite do it. This is from Rule when we talk about year two, and is Nebraska on schedule?
Yeah, I think year two here is, you know, like year one here was like year two at Temple and Baylor. Like, you know, Baylor coming off that scandal, it was like triage, man. Like, you know, it's sometimes it's funny. I always felt like we did our best job coaching at Temple and at Baylor in year one. Sometimes that's when you're under the most pressure, duress. People are questioning what you're doing. But I look back, I say, man, we saved the program at Baylor in year one. Here, the program didn't need saved. Scott Frost had done a good job. He brought in talent. There were good players here, good people here. What we have to do is we have to take our program, and that's really the challenge for right now, is we've got to stop being the team that loses the close games, right? You know, I kind of at first didn't really want to talk about that. I was like, hey, that has nothing to do with me, but that's where we are. And what I believe is always that close losses, if you stay focused and can you get your team, kind of like I said earlier, to not worry about the result, but just focus on executing that play and doing what they do and doing it with confidence, close losses become close wins. And eventually close wins become big wins. And we had a lot of close losses last year. We also had some close wins. We just went right back to the drawing board. So I think we're ahead of schedule, but that schedule only shows up in the fall. And, you know, if we come out in the fall and we lose the first two games by, you know, a point at the end of the game, then we aren't where we want to be. I like where we're at. I like where we're headed. I like the progress we've made. Now we just have to go do it in the season. And we have to go do it in the fourth quarter when pressure is all around us. Instead of saying, oh, here we go again, we have to go out there and say, hey, we're Nebraska. Like, we have a right to win this game and go make the plays to win it.
It's nice to hear him embrace the pressure, understand that it's head coach, it's quarterback, it's a team thing, it's a staff thing. But not, we're in the off season. You know, when it gets to get ratcheted up, how do you deal with pressure? How do you deal with expectations? And that's a learning process. And he's not wound so tight. At least he doesn't show that outwardly. I mean, there could have been a lot of pressure and snippiness or shortness after how October went, and then how your first 2 weeks in November went, and they ended up going 0-4, and he just talks about it, man, and it's like, look, this is where the program's at, this is what you need to be able to do, and why beat around the bush on it? No, let's just kind of call it out and try and figure out a way to get better so it's not a thing anymore. And he realized that. And Elijah, he shifted and he's right to say this, you know, this is my first year, these close losses, it's just year one, but it's been an ongoing problem in the program that he's inherited and he's going to try and deal with.
It's the chest wound that you've had to deal with.
It's your bar tab. Elijah's bar tab from the weekend when he left his debit card.
You can't show up to the crime scene and see the guy who's bleeding out of his chest and say, that's not my problem. I wasn't here for it. No, it's clearly the number one issue you're dealing with right now, actually. On another note here before we get out, are you seeing these comments we're getting in comparing me to Rosie O'Donnell?
You?
Yeah.
How?
Elijah is the new Rosie. Rosie's finally read the chat. Elijah O'Donnell sounds like something a fan of The View would say. Everyone just seems to think I'm Rosie O'Donnell. It's an insult, I think.
Leave that be. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 from Haymarket Park. See ya.
A Huda Media Production.